It's time for Let's Talk Legal with your host, Cecil Harvell and Wes Collins from the law firm of Harvell & Collins. If you've got a legal question, they can give you the answer. Call now, 1-800-818-2255, and let's talk legal.
Let's Talk Legal with Harvell & Collins, attorneys at law, the right advice at the right time, and Cecil Harvell and Wes Collins with us this morning. Good morning, gentlemen.
Good morning, Ben.
Good morning, Ben.
All right, what are we talking about today?
Well, we're talking this morning about fiduciary responsibility. We've talked about that over the past couple of weeks. And today we're going to get kind of more into where the rubber hits the road with regard to if all else fails, and we haven't been able to work out whatever the issue is, then we're having to file a lawsuit. So we're going to talk a little bit about the inner workings of that lawsuit, what it looks like, what claims are brought, the discovery process, the damages, the trial, the summary judgment, the whole thing, as it relates to, these issues.
So where do we start when someone believes that a fiduciary has not been responsible?
Well, Ben, let's just say this as a bit of background for maybe someone who didn't listen last week. You know, we're talking about, for instance, you know, someone who has taken charge within a power of attorney, and the family is absolutely convinced that they have used funds for themselves or others and not for the principal.
Right.
Or there has been an executor who has violated their duties of office and has accelerated certain expenses or whatever that are not legitimate to the estate.
Right.
It can be a trustee under a trust who is for whatever reason not seeing due to the reasonable person standard that all of the assets within the trust are for the benefit of the beneficiaries. Now, as we discussed last week, there is a heightened duty on all of these fiduciaries.
Yes.
And then, of course, we do everything that we can do to try to guide these fiduciaries when we represent them so that they do not have a problem. And then when we have a problem come in our office, we also try to do everything we can to resolve it. And we are able to resolve probably the majority of those of them. But there are those cases, unfortunately, that land on Mr. Collins' desk in our office that must be litigated. There is no other way. There's an, you know, maybe the fiduciary is completely not cooperative. They will not respond to letters or inquiries. They will not deliver the bank statements, the account statements. We do not have accurate records. And so the family at that point, they're pushed into a corner. And there's no question but that, you know, a good lawyer is going to need to file a lawsuit. So let's talk about, you know, how that lawsuit is filed, under what kinds of bodies of law, and then what happens after it is filed.
Okay. All right. Where do we begin?
Usually in that type of case, we're going to be filing that in state court. If there's a party that resides locally, then it may be a Carteret County case or Craven County case or Onslow County case, depending on you know, Lenore, wherever our radio waves reach.
Right.
You know, however,
state court as opposed to federal court.
Federal court, we could take into consideration if it's more broad. I mean, if we're talking about breach of fiduciary duty in another state, so on and so forth, potentially the case could get removed to federal court, or we could file it there, depending on what the damages are. But in most cases, it's going to be a civil superior court case, meaning the highest trial court level in North Carolina, and then there will be almost. In almost all these cases, at least one of the parties asks for a jury. So, and that's kind of the way that works, as we've talked about on the program before. Either party may request a jury, and then, you know, that's your right. If you don't, then you waive that right, and then it would be a bench trial. But we file that suit, obviously, against whoever the defendant is, and this could be an individual who's serving in this capacity. It could be maybe Co's, it could be more than one person. Whenever you file a suit like that, you always want to file the action against the person individually and in their fiduciary capacity. Kind of get into the weeds a little bit here, but that's a detail that's important because the law in North Carolina through our cases is pretty specific that, you know, when you bring an action for breach of fiduciary duty, you have to name the person in that capacity.
Right.
Executor of the estate of, mm-hmm. or power of attorney, you know, whatever it might be.
Right.
Because it's a fiduciary related lawsuit. So a lot of the claims that we're looking at, are just the actual claim of breach of fiduciary duty.
Mm-hmm.
That is a claim that's recognized in North Carolina. Also, potentially there will be a fraud claim. There could be an unfair and deceptive trade practices claim, depending on the circumstances.
Mm-hmm.
Those are generally the type of claims that you're talking about when you think that there is a, you know, breach of that fiduciary duty type situation. Now, another thing that you look at is that, depending on how egregious the actions are of the fiduciary, it may be criminal as well. There may be some criminal aspects here that the district attorney, investigators, detectives, mm-hmm. Sheriff's department, for example, police department may be interested in examining.
Elder abuse is
that's
one
right.
of those areas.
Elder abuse, or it could be just so obvious and open after we learn a little bit
right.
about it, of course, because mm-hmm. it's not going to be open initially, that it would rise potentially to the level of an embezzlement.
Mm-hmm. You know, forgeries and identifications.
Right. Well, you have the right to access these funds. Mm-hmm. And you have the right to use these funds because you're the attorney in fact, or under the power of attorney, for example, or you're the trustee, you're the some mm-hmm. type of fiduciary. But you clearly are using these funds, for example, maybe for your own benefit.
Mm-hmm.
You know, maybe to go on trips, maybe to, you know, pay for your animals, to mm-hmm. pay your own mortgage,
yeah.
you know, do those kind of things, as opposed to using those funds for the benefit of this person who may have designated you to be the attorney in fact.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I have a case, you know, currently don't want to get into too much detail about it, but just a classic case of breach of fiduciary duty where there was an individual named as an attorney in fact for someone who had some very serious health issues and just could not take mm-hmm. care of it by themselves.
Right.
They didn't have the ability to check behind this person. Well, mm-hmm. it was very gross and obvious breach of that fiduciary duty for the benefit of the attorney in fact.
Mm-hmm.
And now that's all coming full circle and we're beginning to see these things, and there is a criminal element to that and a civil element for that particular case because it was so egregious.
But to get there, that probably comes through discovery and lots of other means, right?
It does, and Cecil's right. You know, we kind of start out before we ever file the lawsuit with asking questions about the documentation. Mm-hmm. I want to see the bank records, and I want to see the process checks, and I mm-hmm. may want to see the credit card statements, you know, information that's going to put the financial picture together for us.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, a telltale sign of breach of fiduciary duty is if that fiduciary won't provide the information.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of times that does, as he said, backs us into a corner so that we, you know, have to file that lawsuit and it ends up on my desk at Harvard
right.
and Collins, and that's
right.
what we're doing. So we prepare the complaint, is served, and then obviously the party is filed and served, and the party, the defendant, has a 30-day period of time to answer that complaint, just like, you know, any other lawsuit of that type.
Mm-hmm.
And they
What if you're concerned that tipping your hat, even just by asking for those documents, might cause somebody to even do more harm to the account?
Well, you know, there's not a whole lot you can do about that unless mm-hmm. we think that we can get an attachment lien, like if mm-hmm. someone is going to abscond with the, you know, with the with the money, you mm-hmm. know, if they're going to leave the jurisdiction, you know, that kind of thing. So, really that's a risk that you take.
Mm-hmm.
But in many cases, when we're talking about a breach of fiduciary duty, they don't have access to the funds anymore because mm-hmm. we've already revoked the power of attorney.
Right.
Or they're no longer the trustee, or they're no longer the executor, or the estate's already closed, so they can't get to it.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of times we don't have that problem because they don't have access to it anymore. And in other times, in my experience, folks who breach the fiduciary duty, a lot of times they go through everything.
Mm-hmm.
They have a spending problem.
Right.
And they can't stop themselves.
Anyway.
And they go through all the money.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's not anything else left. So, again, 30 days to answer. There's an automatic right to get that extended to 60. And then we get the answer to the complaint, which in many cases, is doesn't give us a whole lot of information, and we then have to get into the discovery process.
Mm-hmm. But the wonderful thing, mm-hmm. just 1 minute about yeah. this, Ben, the critical point right now is mm-hmm. that now our client has subpoena power.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we have the backing of the court to demand that we now get the records.
Right.
So
right.
you do not have that with just a letter or a request or a phone call or a family meeting or any of those things. But mm-hmm. once a formal lawsuit is filed, you now have the power of the court behind the request for the information. And this is really critical.
Okay. All right. So we're going to take a short break. We'll come back with more here on Let's Talk Legal with Harvell and Collins, attorneys at law. We're talking about what happens when that responsibility is not met by a fiduciary and the steps that you take. And we'll have more to come in just a moment. If you would like to ask a question, 800-818-2255, 247-7282, or 353-4674. Hey, welcome back here on Coastal Daybreak here on the Talk Station, 7:47 in the morning, and good to have you along with us here on Let's Talk Legal with Harvell and Collins, inviting your questions at 800-818-2255 or the local numbers.
247-7282 or 353-4674.
Okay, where were we now?
Subpoena power.
Yeah, we're talking about the subpoena power. Mm-hmm. We're talking about access to records so we can put this financial picture together in this breach of fiduciary duty case. You know, of course, we can get our own records. Mm-hmm. We don't need a subpoena to do that. We can, send the appropriate authorization to the bank where our money was that mm-hmm. the fiduciary accessed and took. So we can do that. But we can't get information with regard to the actual fiduciary's records. So mm-hmm. that's where the subpoena does come in, because let's say that money was transferred, from an account that was our account over to this fiduciary's account. Well, I can't just send a letter to XYZ Bank saying, this fiduciary took the money. Why don't you send us the account statement so we see, what's been done with it? We can see that it went there, but we can't see, how it's been spent. So obviously the discovery power that we have through the lawsuit is going to allow us to do that. The other thing that we look at, of course, there's statute of limitations. I mean, in general, don't want to get into the weeds with regard to that. But 3 or 4 years, some claims are 3 years, and some fraud-based claims are going to be 4 years from mm-hmm. the date that you knew or should have known of the fraudulent activity.
Right.
So note that. That's mm-hmm. something that is important. Another thing we have to look at very closely, with regard to breach of the fiduciary duty is the actual account itself. If the account that's been breached or that the fiduciary has accessed or the accounts – would be just in the name of the principal.
Mm-hmm.
And the power of attorney, the attorney in fact, is then accessing that through the power of attorney, then they have to use those funds for the benefit of that principal.
Right.
Or with their knowledge, so on and so forth, paying their bills, just things for them. But we have to look at this closely in the event that the account is set up like a joint account.
Right.
So we've got both the fiduciary and the principal on the account, then either party has full access to the account. So in a lot of these cases, we see that the fiduciary has gotten to be pretty slick.
Mm-hmm.
They're not just accessing the account and paying their own bills with the account and hoping nobody finds out. They may be transferring funds in some way to an account that's joint.
Mm-hmm.
So their argument is, well, what was wrong with my putting this money in the principal's account, from the principal's account into our account together?
Right.
Oh, it made it easier for me to access it.
Yes.
It made it easier for me to deal with it.
Mm-hmm. There's no hassles about being a power of attorney.
Exactly. And then when you talk with the district attorney about it, one of the first questions they ask
mm-hmm.
is going to be, was it a joint account they were accessing? Mm-hmm. Because legally, if it's a joint account, either party has the right to access the funds.
Like tenants by entirety, but they have the full use of it.
That's right. So then one more layer of the onion, we have to then look at the signature cards.
Mm-hmm.
How did that joint account get set up?
Mm-hmm.
Did it get set up with the power of attorney? Did the principal know that it was going to be set up? You know, so if we find out that the principal didn't know anything about that,
about this other account.
About this joint account that their name is on, but just signed through power of attorney.
Mm-hmm.
Or maybe even signed directly in, under their name, but they didn't know what they were signing. Then that's just, part of the plan. That's part of the scheme. But again, now we're getting into a lot of detail here today, but the discovery rules allow us to uncover all that, allow us to get all the information. And, we do that through interrogatories, which are written requests for information that have to be answered by the parties, requests for production of documents and requests for admissions, and also by serving subpoenas on these institutions, whether it be credit card statements, bank statements, process checks, so we can put that entire financial record and picture together.
So the fiduciary who's a defendant, for example, you can get their personal credit cards and their personal checking account?
Absolutely.
Yeah, right.
I mean, there's probably going to be an allegation in the complaint that they transferred funds into their own account.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if we think that's what happened, and that opens the door up to that being a discoverable issue. So therefore we can serve discovery on that particular issue. And
then as you
records.
Start to compare those records, you can tell the story. I mean, the story starts to evolve.
Exactly. That's when, I've spent many an hour with thousands of pages of bank records in front of me spread out.
Mm-hmm.
At conference room at Harvell and Collins with the door shut, nobody bothering me, because it gets to be a web sometimes, and you just have to put that outline, that kind of flow chart together to understand what this fraudster was doing.
We'll have more to come in a moment here on Let's Talk Legal with Harvell and Collins, 800-818-2255. If you'd like to ask a question, or you can call the local numbers too.
247-7282 or 353-4674.
Hey, welcome back here on a Coastal Daybreak on the Talk Station with Let's Talk Legal with Harvell and Collins, attorneys at law. And then we kind of get to a conclusion here where you find that somebody is guilty.
Yeah, well, it takes a while to go through discovery. We then take depositions.
Mm-hmm.
It's a process.
Right.
And it takes months for us to get to that point. But once we get to that point, we've got the picture and, we're ready to try the case. And in the event we're able to prove our case, which I've talked about a couple of weeks ago, as a breach of fiduciary duty claim, then there's a shifting of the burden with regard to the liability. They have to basically prove they didn't breach the fiduciary duty, which is nice if you're on the plaintiff's side for the defendant to have the burden to prove that they didn't. So anyway, we go through that process, and in the event that we prevail on the case, then the fiduciary is then personally responsible through a judgment, a money judgment. But another thing that we look at very, very closely, obviously, through discovery is what assets could we recover from?
Right.
Because
if
all the money is gone, then that's a problem.
Yeah.
So did the fiduciary buy real property? Mm-hmm. Is there any evidence that the fiduciary paid for some real property in someone else's name, paid for assets in someone else's name? We look at setting aside transactions, and it could lead to a fraudulent conveyance lawsuit as well, depending on, how broad the breach was.
Right.
Because this isn't just about finding out what happened, going to court, trying the case, winning the case, getting the verdict from the jury. This is about collecting for the client.
Mm-hmm.
So during this whole process, we're usually able to learn a lot about what we can collect from. Is this judgment collectible? Where can, and, real property is, what are you going to do with that?
Exactly.
There it is. It could be in someone else's name, but obviously there probably would be a paper trail to get us to that point. So, that's generally, the process that we go through. Again, as we've spoken about, we really try to avoid having to go through that process for our clients if we can, because, usually you can get a pretty clear answer to what transpired early on in most cases by simply asking the right questions
exactly.
and requesting the right documentation. But again, the telltale sign is if they won't provide the information, you know, if they lawyer up and, mm-hmm. you know, here we go on that type of crusade.
Can you attach future earnings or things
well,
like that?
Well, that
judgment affects yeah. it.
That's where we want to say right now. I mean, Ben, our listeners need to know, you know, that ultimately the fiduciary can be held liable.
Mm-hmm.
And this is being held liable not in their capacity as fiduciary, but individually. And their individual assets now
mm-hmm.
are attachable and are subject to collection of that judgment.
Mm-hmm.
So this is an executor or a power of attorney or a trustee's, you know, worst nightmare,
right.
obviously.
Right.
But the law does allow an aggrieved party, an mm-hmm. injured party, once there has been proof and establishment of the same and a judgment in favor of the aggrieved party,
mm-hmm.
it does allow the aggrieved party to then be able to seek recovery against the individual assets of the fiduciary.
Mm-hmm.
So this kind of takes us full circle, doesn't it?
Right.
When
right.
you're named as an executor, when you're named as a power of attorney or a trustee, it's a serious appointment.
Mm-hmm.
It's a time when you really do have to walk and talk like a fiduciary.
Mm-hmm.
There's a heightened obligation on you to account, to keep good records. And so that this does not occur.
Right.
So that for some reason, because of malfeasance or whatever the reason might be, negligence, you then are held individually responsible.
And again, this is as with all lawsuits, they take twists and turns and are subject to, you need a lot of patience, in other words, to go through all this, right?
Yeah, well, that's right. I mean, normally cases that are filed in superior court, you're going to be at least a year out before you see mm-hmm. trial
mm-hmm.
Anyway. So it's more probably like 18 months or
something.
And
these are
like
often
that.
So emotional too. So
they are. That's something that obviously we have to deal with. If it's a family situation, obviously it's extraordinarily emotional. Sometimes mm-hmm. we're dealing with breach of fiduciary duty in a business context.
Right.
And sometimes it's something that's more somewhat arm's length. It doesn't hit so close to home from an emotional, you know, standpoint. But we deal with all kinds of these situations. You know, I tell you what, there's a lot of job security in dealing with these things because people are just greedy out there.
Yeah.
It's amazing the things that we end up seeing.
You want to find out more about how to get the right advice at the right time and talk to the folks at Harvell and Collins Attorneys at Law, you can give them a call at 252-726-9050. They're at 1107 Bridges Street in Morehead City, and find them online at harvellandcollins.com.